Welcome, everyone. My name is Mike Verbsky, and you are listening to Limitless. This podcast is brought to you by the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy. And good evening, everyone. Welcome back to Limitless. Again, my name is Mike Verbsky, your host of Limitless. For those of you that have heard about us and you're checking us out for the first time, welcome aboard. This is a great Thursday night. We're starting to work our way closer to the weekend here. I'm just so excited tonight. This evening, we have Adrian Hazlett on our program, on our show. Adrian, you are definitely a bit of a renaissance woman here. I was looking through all of your stuff. She's a world traveler. She's a ballroom dancer. She's a public speaker, a motivator. She works on a number of different projects and advocacy works and organizations. And Adrian, welcome to Limitless.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So I think I want to kind of get started with your unfortunate introduction to the limb loss community. Your story was not one. We've had guests on the show where it's been a congenital issue or it's been as a result of surgery, of cancer, things like that. Yours was definitely not a planned amputation or limb loss start.
No, gosh, no, it was not. I've obviously being a part of the limb loss community or limb difference community, I definitely have seen all stories, as I know you have as well, and different whys, right? But my why is a terrorist attack at the Boston Marathon bombing. So it was actually because someone legitimately wanted to kill me or at least hurt me deeply. And they succeeded in that. I've done many things since then, but yeah, I definitely lost my lower leg at the Boston Marathon bombings. And that was in 2013.
So for you, were you running that day? Were you a spectator?
So no, I was definitely not running and not really a spectator either. I was a professional ballroom dancer at the time and had taken a day off of work after competing at a very high level, had decided to take a day off of work, which I normally did not do. Most professional athletes, if they take a day off, they practice 6 hours instead of, you know, the usual 12. But I took the full day and was walking around. I had never run a day in my life. Truly, I used to forge notes in high school to get out of running the obligatory mile. And this time I was just walking by and I saw a bunch of people running and asked what it was. And someone told me it was the Boston Marathon. And as much as I had no interest in running at all, I thought, well, running 26.2 miles for a statement necklace and a free banana sounds crazy. But I have respect for these athletes. And I started walking away from the finish line where I was. And I walked a couple of blocks away and I heard a loud blast behind me. And I turned around and this bomb had gone off. I knew it wasn't just a transformer or fireworks or any of that. I knew it was a terrorist attack. And I plugged my ears and the next one hit about 3 blocks away, which is 2 feet from where I was standing. And my life was forever changed. I lost my foot immediately there on the ground.
Wow. Wow. So in your case, because this was a traumatic amputation and obviously something that couldn't be planned and scheduled, how did you find your initial recovery phases in the hospital? If you went to rehab for a period of time after that, how did you find that initial journey and that transition?
Excruciating. I felt very, to be, you know, blown up. It's one thing, and I say this because I have talked to and was visited by a lot of military personnel, my Superman surgeon who worked on me and saved my life. And I met with different military groups, and all of the military members that met with both of us had said, you know, hey, you were hit with a roadside bomb, right? And when we go into battle, we certainly don't want to be hit, but we know what we're getting into. We know when we go to war that that is a possibility. And the people we met with were either surgeons trying to learn from what happened to me and others, or they were people that had lost limbs in roadside bombs in war, fighting for our country. And they said, we knew what we were getting into, but for you, you didn't, there was nothing that could have prepared you for that day. So the trauma and the stranger danger of everyone, including doctors and nurses and people that were trying to help, and people walking down the hall, and PTs and OTs, everybody was a stranger. Everybody was a terrorist to a lot of us, including myself. You just develop this fear of the world that really stunts your growth and your ability to heal right away, for sure.
Now, how did you find then a way to work towards overcoming that and then get being able to progress in your recovery? Because that's a common theme that we hear from people. You as patients, you're putting your faith and your trust in a whole bunch of strangers that you don't know, and you're just naturally trying to trust them. But in your case, being that this was stemming from a traumatic event where trust and faith in your fellow human being is shattered, how did you work towards overcoming that?
You know, it's tough. There's a story that goes along with that that really opened my eyes to it. And I've told this only in one other podcast, I think. But I was in the hospital room just days. I mean, two days after. And I was still hooked up to a tube down my throat. So I had to write everything down in order to communicate. I didn't have a voice, which for me is very difficult. I mean, all of it was difficult. But to not be able to communicate was excruciating. I had a clipboard, one of those wooden clipboards, you know, the old fashioned ones with like the metal clip. And I'm writing, trying to write. I have no motor skills because I'm doped up on every pain med you would imagine from being blown up and on fire and all these things. And I'm alone in my hospital room. And a guy walks in a leather jacket and a shirt and jeans. And I have never been violent, and, you know, and I don't think I'm a violent person. And without thinking, without even realizing I was about to do it, I was trying to write something down for one of the nurses that was going to come in. And I take the clipboard and I chuck the clipboard at this guy from across room. And I slice, like the metal part slices his forehead. It was an FBI agent that was coming to interview me for what I saw on the sidewalk. And that let all of the hospital know that they need to be very careful of who they let into the hospital rooms. To be clear, we are friends now and it's fine, but I definitely...
Well, that's one way to meet new people.
Yeah, exactly. It was awesome. It was a great way to make a first impression. but in all seriousness, you know, it definitely let myself, who was just as shocked, I think, as the guy, that I was even capable of doing something like that, let everyone know how incredibly terrified we all were. And from that moment going forward at not only the hospital where I was, but all the other hospitals, decided to have the same doctors, same nurses come in every single day. And so that started to build trust. So that's my answer to your question about how do you build trust and start overcoming? Because as you said, especially with amputees, we're forced into these situations with these new terms, new legs, new body parts, new people in our lives that we're supposed to trust at like the most vulnerable time. So that interaction with that FBI agent resulted in these doctors and nurses sleeping when we slept, taking breaks when we were taking breaks. And then I only saw the same faces for the entirety of when I was in the hospital. So that really helped. And then things were overly explained at the door before other people came in. So I think that really set the tone for just having a little bit more control over my environment and who I would see and who I wouldn't. And I think that definitely led toward having more trust in people and really building the relationships that way. Then I started meeting PTs and OTs and such. And you know, you sort of, as anything, you like, my therapist describes it as like wading in the water, right? You put one set of toes in and you feel it and it's cold, but then you go in a little bit further and it's not as cold and you wait a little while till you feel comfortable and then you go a little further in, right? That's sort of like recovery. And you kind of make the most of it and try and trust as you go. And then once you can trust PTs and OTs, as you know, then you start making physical progress, not only mental progress, but physical progress in becoming more mobile.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of the things that as healthcare professionals, we strive to do. And it's what I teach our other staff members, as well as therapists, students, when they come through, is you have to be able to break through and start building that trust. Because building that trust is, like you said, it's how people will have success in their recovery.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Did you have any early experiences in the rehab process with support groups or peer mentors, someone that had been through it before?
You know, I really didn't. Well, that's not true. I didn't from the people that I really wanted, meaning I didn't see any women. And the only woman I saw, I don't know what her deal was, but she had flown in from somewhere else and had said that she was one of my dear friends and I had never met her before. And she just kept coming into my room and I finally told them she wasn't allowed anymore. So I met with one woman who might have been a little crazy. We didn't really talk very much. It was brief. And then That was a time when I was becoming more of a public figure, or at least in a lot of interviews, and I had to be really careful of who was trying to say they were one of my friends and who was actually there as friends. I'd never met her before, ever. And so I didn't see any women. I saw a lot of men coming in as peer visitors, and they had their robot legs or like their alma mater on there, or Harley Davidson or Big Flame or painted metal parts, you know, and I didn't see myself in them. I was grateful they were there, but the kind of thing I wanted to talk about was, what does it look like in a dress? What does it look like in jeans? You know, I was a ballroom dancer at the time, still kind of am. And looks mattered, you know, and they still do, but they definitely did, especially back then. You know, my leg looked like my leg, and I had a deep relationship with that leg, and I had a deep understanding of what my body looked like and how it moved. And so what I got from those peer visitors was not what I needed at the time. They didn't really want to, you know, talk about what the leg looked like. They just wanted to talk about all the fun things you could paint on them. That wasn't what I really wanted or what I needed, which I think has really led to my advocacy and drive to be public still. As you well know, there are 508 new amputees every single day in this country. And I know some of those are women and men and in between who want to look like they have a regular looking leg. And so it's important for them to be able to see all different types of limbs and not just one gender. But right. I think, as we all know, there are just more male peer visitors in general. So that's too bad.
And I think you hit on something even more, which is I have some peer visitors that I can bring into my program and meet with our patients when they come in. But for someone who's young and athletic and active, just generally male or female, there's usually less. Whereas my patient population is generally the over 65, over 70. So when right. I do get someone who is in their mid 30s and they go, yeah, but Bob's got nothing in common with me. How am I supposed to relate to him? Because I'm active in this event. I go here every single week. I'm in the dating scene, or I have young kids. And that's another whole level of those conversations that do need to happen and need to be addressed. But if you don't have the right peer mentor and you don't have the right sounding board for those concerns, it's easy to feel ignored or feel alone.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're already feeling othered when you become an amputee. You're feeling othered. And then if you're feeling othered already, and then you meet with people who are supposedly someone in the professional atmosphere, this in that profession says, oh, we're going to find someone who's just like you. And they bring in like a 250 pound Harley Davidson guy to an active ballroom dancer. I'm like, no, this is not.
It's not a match.
And it might make them feel worse. So I think that that's where the knowledge needs to come is like, is it helpful to bring in a peer visitor just to bring in a peer visitor? Or is it helpful to bring in a peer visitor? Are we only bringing in that peer visitor because they also have limb loss? Because they're very different humans.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Even when I match up patients with the prosthetists, I try to do a little bit of a matching game there to see which personality is going to work well with that patient.
Absolutely.
Because not every single person is going to work well with everybody else. And some people have a very strong or pulled back personality. Or if you have certain goals that you definitely want to hit, then you need that right prosthetist to help you reach those goals.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I talk with my other amputee friends all the time about how the relationship with your prosthetist is the most intimate 100%. You have. So it's just so important. And let me tell you, if you're looking for a peer visitor and you have an active amputee, I'm your girl, because they can do a lot virtually. I offer a thing on one of my business ventures that I just joined. It's called Tin Can. And it's TINNCANN. And it's like the two cans with a string between. It's that kind of idea where two people can really connect. And I offer sessions. So one of them is public speaking. Another one's helping PTs and OTs help their patients if they want to talk to me about how they can help their patients. And then another one I have is helping you through your first year as an amputee. It's choose your own adventure. I can come with you to your prosthetist appointment virtually, and I can sit with you through the PTSD of it all. I can show you my scars and tell you kind of how that heals. I can recommend what my prosthetist has recommended. Anything you want, I offer it there. So if you ever have any kind of someone who has a need for that, that's one of the reasons I did it was because of exactly what we're talking about, the lack of peer visitors that are women.
Right. Oh, that's an awesome service. That's an awesome venture that you have going on there, because that it's definitely a hole in the system.
Yeah, for sure. I saw it myself and I want to help in any way I can in filling that hole, for sure.
In looking at your website and some of the information you have on there, you were connected with an organization called Limbs for Life.
I was. I'm not currently, but I was. I served on their board for a number of years. They help with getting people who need prosthetics, which is great. And it was an honor to serve on their board. I've moved on to other things, but they're definitely great.
And what other sort of organizations have you been a part of in terms of whether advocacy or spreading positive messages out to the general communities?
I have worked with a group called ROMP, which is R-O-M-P, Range of Motion Project. And the Range of Motion Project is in Ecuador and Guatemala. And what they do is find, it's very similar to the other organization, is that they provide limbs and prosthetics for people in Ecuador and Guatemala. And I have fundraised for them at what I call the Adrian Strong Mile, which we've run in Boston 2 consecutive years pre-COVID. Hope to bring that back soon and raise money for them. And I went down and hiked a couple of ice volcanoes with them in Ecuador and showed really what people can do when you give them the devices that they so desperately need, whether that's to walk to the bathroom or walk up 17,000 feet. So that was really wonderful to work with them. And I still have a great relationship with them. And some other advocacy I've worked on is fighting for to overturn the One Leg a Lifetime law in the state of New York and getting to work with the American Orthotics and Prosthetics Association and Amputee Coalition was really a dream. We were able to overturn that. And then fighting for a new division in the Boston Marathon. So when I folded and became a runner, one of those crazy people that goes 26.2 miles for a statement necklace and a free banana, I found quickly that there were no competitive divisions for people like me who run in a running blade. And there are certainly amputees who have competed and are welcome to compete, but they compete in chairs. And that's wonderful. That's just simply not how I run and how quite a few other people run. So I advocated for that new division and was thrilled after years and years to be able to get that and to be able to have a place where people can compete. And I came in 4th this year in the Boston Marathon and then raced in the first competitive division in the 10K division of that same group's race, the Boston Athletic Association 10K. And I won that race on my birthday, which was my first all over win at a race, which felt really good. And I love being able not only to win it, but especially to win it for raising awareness that it's an option now for people. I remember when we had the press conference for announcing that we had a new division, I had phone calls and videos of parents telling their kids that they could one day win the Boston Marathon, who were people with limb difference and limb loss. And it was just so moving to see them have this goal. And these little kids, these little 8, 9-year-old kids, 10-year-old kids are still sending me training videos and they're going to whoop whatever time I could ever do because they're starting a lot sooner than I did. And it's just really awesome to see them have a space for that. So I'm just super grateful. It feels really good.
Well, that's fantastic. And congratulations on those wins. That's amazing.
Thank you.
As someone who, as I say, I've run a couple marathons myself. It is definitely a journey in and of itself.
Which marathons have you done?
So I did in 2011. Yes, 2011, I did the Philadelphia Marathon.
Awesome.
And then in 18, my thing was I wanted to do a marathon for my 40th birthday. And I actually got into New York City that year.
Yes.
So I've done Philly and I've done New York. I've watched a lot of Boston marathons. I went to school actually in Boston. So the finish line was, in essence, around the corner. I went to Northeastern.
Yeah.
Right around the corner was that finish line. So we would just walk over and, you know, a bunch of dumb college kids just hang around for the rest of the day.
Yeah, there are a lot of crazy college kids on the marathon course. That's what makes it so loud and so great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, you have that sort of picture in your mind. And then with New York City, they always talk about how when you come off the 59th Street Bridge, the bridge itself is totally silent because there's no spectators at all. And you just hear everybody's footsteps. But as soon as you come off the bridge and you hit First Avenue in Manhattan, and it's just a wall of noise, and you always hear those stories, But until it happens, it just like hits you like sound waves one after the next. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that about New York City Marathon. I have not run New York. I am a Boston. I always say never, but I think I'll be Boston for life because of my connection to it. But never say never. We'll see.
I was going to say, you never know. You never know. Yeah. It's interesting because New York City is all lottery based in terms of getting into the marathon. Right. And I've been trying for like a decade to get in. Never could, never happened. So I was like, it's never going to happen. And then the one year in particular that I really wanted and it came through. So you never know.
That's wonderful. And what a treat that must have been. I mean, that's a great way to roll in 40.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you're still traveling, yes?
Yes. I am picking up traveling again. Obviously, you know, during COVID, it was a little bit of a different story. I was a competitive ballroom dancer prior to 2013 and losing my leg, but I got back to dancing, got back to competing for a little bit, decided I would trade in standing in front of, you know, old dirty white men with numbers saying that how good or bad my body was in a spray tan and like a string fringe dress. I traded that in for throwing snot rockets and sweating in public and wearing flats and competing in races. And I am happy with that trade. So I still compete a little bit, but my career is now public speaking. So that has me traveling the globe. And I've been all over. 4 years ago, I spent a month in Kenya and I did a month each in Ecuador and Nepal. I've done Copenhagen and Ireland and a tour across North America and Mexico. Yeah, it's very fun and very rewarding work. And I get to work with other fellow amputees and I get to help people over a speed bump or Mount Everest and be able to help them get through the hard times. So it feels really nice to be able to assist people with that after this big Boston Strong movement happened here after what I went through. It's the least I could do is help other people.
That's great. That's phenomenal. I have two separate questions that would come up with your traveling. And the first one is, what sort of challenges have you had to overcome when traveling with your prosthetic? Or if you did any traveling before you had your prosthetic, you know, what sort of things have you had to overcome, whether getting through customs, getting through airports?
Yeah, definitely. It's such a great question and a topic that I don't get asked often on podcasts because it would only come from someone who's also in the community, right? Because people just don't know what they don't know. I think one of the things about being in my mid-30s, I'm 42 now, so being in my mid-30s when this happened, I definitely lived a life where the only thing I was worried about was like, where do you get a glass of wine when you through checkpoint and how long is this person going to go? I can't believe this person's bringing bottles of water through. Or like, that was my biggest concern. I had no concerns other than the average Joe of going through an airport. And then you become an amputee and everything changes. So as I built my business as a speaker, I was traveling right out of the gate from 2013. As soon as I could be mobile enough to walk, I was back to traveling and traveling all over the globe, as you heard. So, you know, I had a lot of setbacks. I've never talked about this before, but I will now. I was set to perform in the opening ceremonies of the Paralympics in Rio. I had been asked to audition. I'd been approached for the gig. They said it was mine if I just sent in, you know, met with this person and auditioned with them. So I met with a lot of people from the National Olympic Committee and International Olympic Committee and Paralympic Committee. And they flew out to Boston and met with them, danced with them. And the gig was mine. We started working together. I was on my way down to Rio and I had my leg in my suitcase and I was arrived in Florida. And then you have to move your bags instead of them going through on their own. You move them through international, right? So okay. I went to go move my bags to international and they weren't there. And I had a very specialized prosthetic that I was dancing in that they had requested that I dance in that I was in charge of bringing down with me because that was my leg. And I was obviously walking in my regular leg. And my bag wasn't there and I couldn't find anyone to help me. And I asked American Airlines, they weren't helping. So I sent out a tweet. Now this was 2015. And I put on Twitter, I was like, and first of all, I didn't have very many followers at the time. Twitter was not what it is now. It wasn't a place you called people out. That's not at all even what I was trying to do. And I said, hey, American Airlines, you have my dance leg. I couldn't say that I was dancing for the Paralympics at the time, but I said, you have my dance leg. I'm on my way to a gig. I couldn't say where I was going because it would have been too obvious. And I said, can you please help out? And it caught wind in like 5 seconds and was one of the first like viral lost luggage things that happened. And I, meanwhile, I'm just at the airport, like just hanging out, having some food and killing time while, you know, I'm not even on, like I tweet it and I think it's not going to be seen for 5 days. Like, I don't know what's happening.
Right.
And so I call the Olympic committee and I'm like, hey, I don't have my leg. They said, okay, then wait until you find the leg before you come. So I didn't get on my flight, got in a hotel room, opened my phone and was like, oh my God, it had gone. I mean, it had caught wildfire and I couldn't find my leg. My leg actually went to another country.
Oh my goodness.
And I never went to Rio and then flew home. I was devastated. 5 days later, my bag comes back. Meanwhile, it had stayed trending one on Twitter for a long time. I was embarrassed. I was, even though I had nothing to be embarrassed about, I was defeated. I was all of these things. I mean, I could write a whole book about all the emotions I went through and how many phone calls I got from American. And I was really upset and hurt and was, you know, told them I'm not trying to hurt you, you know, and finally got it. And then the Olympic committee wrote me and said, it's too hard. If this is going to be too hard for you, it's too hard for us. And I was let go as a result of that lost luggage. So it was really super hard. I don't know how, I mean, obviously I had no control over that, but it was super hard. And ever since then I've carried every single leg on and I don't, if they force me to check, I just don't.
I understand why.
Yeah, that's just not going to happen. So yeah, it's very hard. But you know, I think one of the things that's hard that I run into every day, that was a very, you know, unique scenario, obviously. But one of the things I run into every day in traveling is someone who's at TSA who just has no idea what the word prosthetic or, you know, amputee or anything even means. Like they've never heard of it before, which is unfortunate because there are 2.2 million amputees in this country. So to have someone that's there that says, I don't know what you're even talking about, when they've been trained in pacemakers, they've been trained in wheelchairs, they've been trained in everything else, but they aren't trained. And I've gone to every single airport in this country practically, and they just don't, there's at least someone every time that just has absolutely no clue what I'm talking about. And I don't like to have to explain it, not because I'm stubborn, but because it makes you feel othered. And anytime someone makes you feel othered, because they're then like, what? And they start raising their voice, you know, and that just, it feels so uncomfortable. No matter how confident I am, it just feels so uncomfortable and makes me frustrated. And, you know, they see my service dog, but they look at me. And even if I'm in tight pants, my leg is fitted. It's formed in a way that doesn't look like a prosthetic. So therefore they just look at me like I'm psycho or something.
And then that just draws more attention to you.
Yeah. And everybody stares and then they're like, what's going on with her? And then they're like, you need to take off your shoes. And then I say, no, I don't. And it's a whole thing. It's never easy. And so I have to really psych myself up to be able to travel like that, which I travel all the time. So it's a whole thing. It's very frustrating.
Sure. Yeah. And then the other question
I could go on a soapbox about all that for a while, but
that might be the next podcast.
Yes.
Yes. The other question that I thought of when you're talking about traveling is, are there any, as you've traveled to other countries, what are the big similarities or differences that you've noticed between different countries and their, whether perceptions or their attitudes towards people that have had limb loss?
Yeah. You know, I found it's way easier to travel international. And I think the average Joe would probably be surprised by that. But people in other countries accept disabilities with no problem most of the time. They may not understand you depending on language barrier, right? But I just point down and then I like knock on my foot like it's, you know, not real and show the plastic and they're like, oh, okay. Like they don't make a big deal. But I feel very othered in traveling within the country. That's not a diss on our country. It's just a diss on how disability is seen in our country. But I found it's great. I mean, flying into Denmark or flying into Ireland or even Nepal and Ecuador and Kenya, like no problem, no big deal at all. If anything it's met with, that's cool. Like, look at that. That's awesome. Like no, not a weird, like, wow, I've never seen that before where they get all loud and uncomfortable, but like a real sincere, sweet embrace by all of their security at the airport. Yeah. It's really remarkable.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's very interesting to hear that.
Yeah. And I would tell you if I didn't, you know, you sometimes run into someone who doesn't quite understand or might look like have a look on their face, but that would take effort for me to find it. But the actual interactions are very welcoming for sure.
Definitely good to know.
You know, I think I definitely thought it would be way worse, you know, I've been very happily surprised.
So Adrienne, so what's next for you?
Let's see. I am speaking a lot. I'm traveling a lot coming up. I have some very exciting gigs in New York, SoCal, Arizona, Boston. I have, of course, a lot locally. And yeah, everything in between. So I'm very excited about that. I am competing in the Boston Athletic Association half marathon on November the 8th. No, in the second week of November, I'll say that. I have a lot of dates running around in my head right now. I don't want to say the wrong date, but I have that coming up. But before all of that, I'm going to go to one of my very dear friend's weddings in Nashville, Tennessee in 2 weeks. So
very nice.
Yeah. So we'll see how Nashville does with amputees at the airport.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We'll see how that goes.
So that big take home message for all of you out there that have had limb loss is life doesn't end just because you've had an amputation, you've gone through limb loss. There's always more to work towards, to strive for, and to always keep setting new and higher goals.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Now, one of the questions that I always love to ask our guests, and it's going to keep happening. So Adrian, if there's any take-home message that you want someone to know, whether it's a patient, whether it's their caregiver or a clinician, what's that one big piece of information you want them to know when going through their recovery or working with that person, working towards their recovery?
Yeah, I think if you're working with someone who's in the limb difference, limb loss community, I think verbiage matters. Verbiage matters. What we say matters. And especially for people that, as you and I talked about at the beginning of this podcast, is we're surrounded by strangers that we're supposed to trust. The easiest way that you can build trust is to help the person feel understood. That doesn't mean you have to agree with them. It just means you repeat what they say and say, I'm hearing you. And verbiage matters. So if you're thinking about saying, oh, can you put your good leg out or your bad leg or bad arm or good arm? Don't ever say that. Say right and left, just like you would with someone else. Verbiage matters, verbiage matters. So don't say victim, say survivor, or ask the person what they want to be called. If it's someone who's in our community themselves, I would say stand up for yourself. If you feel like you aren't getting the good care, if you feel like someone isn't caring, that they're, even though they're being called a caregiver, dump them, find someone else, because they're going to be instrumental in your healing. So don't let anyone drag you down. Dump them and find someone else.
That is awesome advice right there, Adrian.
It's blunt, but it needs to happen. You got to find the care you need.
Yeah, and sometimes blunt is the way it has to be.
Yep. There is no one else who's going to write your story for you. You've got to find the care that you need, and they'll get over it. It's their job. They'll probably learn something. You know, this
exactly.
is your life. This isn't your career. It's their career. It's your whole life. It's your body. So you got to find the people that are going to put the care in caregiving.
Absolutely. I like that. I'm going to steal that one, actually.
Good. Steal it. I like it.
So I want to take a minute here, and I want to thank Adrian for coming on to Limitless. Adrian, this was so much fun. I had a blast tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I loved our conversation. I could have talked for another full hour. So I appreciate the time. And if you ever need me on again, just let me know. I'd love to.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to take you up on that too. For everyone out there listening, my name is Mike Verbsky. You are listening to Limitless. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and stay tuned. We've got more great guests already lined up, so there's going to be a lot more good episodes coming your way.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to listen to Limitless. If you're interested in learning more about the Academy of Amputation and Limb Difference Physical Therapy, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and at our website, www.amputationrehab.org. I hope you enjoyed this talk today, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and information coming to you soon.